change is not pleasant, but the change is constant. Only when we change and grow, we'll see a world we never know. Welcome to A Walk Within. I'm glad to be back with you after season 1 concluded. During this time, what surprised me the most is that the show continued to grow in its audience. I want to thank all of you who listened and are listening right now. So here we are with season 2. Long-time listeners will notice a couple of changes in season 2. The core format of the show, that is, discovering short stories from around the world and revisiting my life experiences invoked by it, remains unchanged. But this time, I will be focusing on a little darker science fiction stories from the bygone era and will try to adapt them in an old-time radio style. Consider this as my humble attempt to the first mass entertainment medium and pay tribute to the shows like Suspense and The Twilight Zone. I hope you like it. With that said, today's story is The Still Small Voice by Clive G.B. Jackson, published in 1950 in the 14th edition of Avon Fantasy Reader, and how it made me think of change and my attitude towards it. As always, we'll start with the story once we are back.
This is A Walk Within, and today's presentation is The Still Small Voice by Clive G.B. Jackson, published in 1950, number 14 edition of Avon Fantasy Reader.
Well, it's like we made it, young Jim.
Yes, Dad. It looks like we did it.
My, will you look at that? All that water. And why do you suppose it's so?
Yes, I wonder why. So they were canals after all. Straight as a die, as far as you can see. My.
Well, young Jim, better get busy on that air analysis, and then we can stretch our legs a while.
Father and son stood in the airlock, side by side, on the threshold of a strange new world. And it was such a feeling that neither of them said anything at all. And then together, they stepped forward out of the ship onto the strange new soil. When they were outside, the tension broke, and they both laughed a little without knowing why. And the boy knelt suddenly and said,
"Look, Dad, see what makes everything so red. Such a tiny, beautiful little plant, and hardly any roots at all."
"Say, just look at these leaves. They must have a million points, and each one perfect as a snowflake."
Then they remembered that they had a ceremony to perform. So they got out the big green UNO flag on its aluminium pole and the small shiny camera on its tripod. The boy took a picture of his father. The father took one of his son. And then they both stood by the flag while the automatic shutter whirred and clicked. They looked very self-conscious.
"By gosh! I never felt so many kinds of darn fool in all my life."
After that, they went on a little walk, not far, because the sun was already almost on the horizon. And while it was setting, they came back and had their first meal on the new world. They opened some cans of beers they had bought especially for the occasion, and the father made a little speech to their imaginary hosts. And they both laughed a great deal. They even sang a little, and the boy played on an old out-of-tune harmonica.
but the more noise they made, the quieter it seemed to be. The sound rolled away and was lost in the solemn silence of the ageless plains. And soon they grew quiet and sat, still smoking their pipes, while the warm night fell around them and the stars came out of one by one like fireflies settling on a velvet cloak. The days that followed were long and very full. They took samples of the soil and rocks, and preserved some of the tiny red flowers, and transplanted some into the boxes, and analyzed the canal water. They made slides of some of the strange algae that made it so green, and took a great many photographs. They made weather observations, but their barometers never varied by a millibar. They tramped many miles with the pack and compass, but they never found anything at all, except the little red plants and the green algae. One evening, when they were sitting smoking their pipes and looking at the familiar stars, the sun set suddenly.
"We will leave tomorrow morning."
His father looked at him, with his pipe halfway to his mouth.
"Well, I know it's been a slight disappointing so far, young Jim, but there's a lot of directions we haven't tried yet. And maybe this is just a calm season. And anyway, if we go back so soon, the assembly will say we haven't done our job properly."
The son knocked out his pipe and stood up.
"We will leave tomorrow morning."
He went to bed. The father was so hurt that he could hardly believe his ears, because his son had never spoken to him in that way before. And he sat very still for a long time, until his pipe grew cold in his hand. And then he went slowly inside the ship to his son, because he could hear him weeping. He came to the boy's bunk without switching on any lights, and he laid his hand on the trembling shoulder very gently.
Forget it, young Jim. This goddamn red word is enough to make anyone edgy. And sure, we'll leave in the morning if you want."
"Oh, Dad, it wasn't me."
"Huh? How's that again, son?"
"It wasn't me that said about leaving. It was someone else. And he's got inside somehow. Inside my head. And I'm scared."
The boy snapped on the lights, and the father saw the naked terror that stared at him from his son's young eyes. And the force of it hit him like a bucket of ice-cold water. And he knew there was nothing he could say, because they were not alone anymore. In the morning, after they had begun to pack their gear, the boy said,
"We can't go, Dad. Not back there. Sometimes he asks me questions about what it's like there, and how do people behave, and what is love, and what is death. And I just know something terrible will come if we go back, if we take him back."
The father stood up and squared his shoulder and said,
"Yes, young Jim. We must stay and fight it here. And maybe if, when he comes back again, you tell me, then maybe I can put my mind alongside of yours and help you to resist him."
He gripped his son's shoulders tightly.
"We got to fight him, son. We just got to."
So they started to unpack the equipment again. Until suddenly, the boy said, without emotion,
"You will prepare the ship for the flight."
And the gun in his hand was trained steady as a rock on his father's heart, and there could be no doubt at all that he would use it. The father looked at his son and said,
"Yes,"
almost in a whisper. And he could not say anything else because of the gun and because of the grief that tore at his heart as he realized that he had lost his son. He moved heavily towards the airlock, and then he leaped like an uncoiled spring and bore the boy to the ground. After a moment, he climbed shakily to his feet and stood looking down at his son with the tears rolling down his cheeks.
and then he stooped and gently drew the harmonica from the vest pocket. It was twisted with the force of the explosion and driven by the bullet. And then he forgot about the harmonica, because although no sound broke the terrible silence, somebody said quite distinctly,
"Now prepare your machine for departure."
When I finished reading this story for the first time, I kept on thinking about its parallels with my own situation. As you know, I started this show last year and walked away from my successful career. It was one of the biggest decisions of my life. As you can imagine, it's hard to walk away from a well-paying job, especially when you spent more than 14 years of your professional life in it, like I did. But being unemployed has its own set of challenges. And as any new content creator will tell you, it's really hard to make a living as a podcast. I also found myself with a lot of idle time and started getting frustrated with the idea of wasting time. I found this story during this time period and could not help but see myself as father and young Jim as this podcast. Just like the sun, it took me to whole new worlds. Gave me so much joy and fulfillment, and then the voice as a constant reminder of my financial needs, a subconscious alert to get back into workforce. Now, just like the father, I have to end this. But then I realized all changes are preceded by chaos. As Maya Angelou said, if you don't like something, change it. If you can't change it, change your attitude. With this idea, I started seeing the same characters in different light. Now, instead of looking the voice negatively, I started seeing the voice as voice of change. Now, young Jim became my old job, which I loved and found so much joy with. The voice became a constant motivation to make change and continue on this creative journey. There is so much power in facing any change with a positive attitude. It can be hard, but change in life is unavoidable. In the end, as Socrates said, the secret of change is to focus all your energy not on fighting the old, but on building the new. That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Let me know your thoughts on the change in the show or change in general. You can reach out to me on show's website or social media. All links are available in the show notes, along with the link to the story and music used in the production of this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Till next time, stay as awesome as you are.